So I got some birds, I got some horns.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself.
My name is... My name is...
Dr. Dre.
Yeah.
Sir Robert Fortune.
Okay, we get it. Start the show.
Yeah. Here's what it is. Do what it do. Woo-hoo. Yeah.
We here to stay, people. Yes, we've been recognized.
You know what that means when that comes through.
Huh. We are having a good time. Again, ladies and gents, how are you? We are officially talking sports with the 12th man. We are in the month of September. College football, what? I mean, I can't even start, man. Hey, I'm going to check in with my fellas really quickly, who I'm not gonna be rude with if they ask a question about my quarterback. I'm going to be nice. I'm going to be like, yo, what's up? You know, we can talk about certain things, make sure we're good. Just to make sure. Yeah. So a lot of love. Hey, let me check in. JQ, how you feeling, bro?
Oh, man, I'm doing good. I wanted to. Yeah, he was tripping. Just give a shout-out to my baby girl who turned 10 today. Just
happy
been running
birthday.
Around with her, trying to make sure. Yep.
Yeah, happy
baby
birthday.
Ava turned 10 today. Just been working the final weekend of Stripers and kind of hanging out with her, trying to make her 10th birthday. Weekend, the good thing, I got her a phone. So, Lord, y'all help me with a 10-year-old daughter with a phone now. So, it is what it is.
Sure
I'm at that
bro.
Point in life. Hey, listen, that's where we are in life.
We sure didn't have that at 10 years old, that's for sure.
but she's by far not the only one. It's been a lot of her friends I had before they were 10. I was like, yeah, we got at least wait to double digits.
I love it. Hey, man, we know that you're a great dad, man, so we appreciate you, man. So awesome times. Happy birthday,
thank
baby
you,
girl, as well. A lot of love, man, so let's keep it going. Rob Ford, man, he was firing off, bro. Quit asking. How you doing, bro? What's up, man?
Doing good. It makes me hate Saint Nicky or Evil Nicky even more.
Yeah, you can't be talking
that's
to me.
That's good. And you know what? I do have a serious question about the two whenever we talk about the topic too, man. So it's pretty interesting. So stay tuned, and it's kind of like we'll show some love to our female fans too as well. So stay tuned as far as that. But just really briefly, let's get the party started here. Let's throw out the numbers, the pertinence information, like as we always do before we get started for talking sports from the 12th man. If you want to call in to your boys, the number, it's always the same. Always the same. It's the 424-243-9519. I have a feeling, gentlemen, we may get some more calls, so I'm going to throw out the disclaimer again. If you want to call in and talk some craziness, we're going to cut you off because the trigger has no part. So keep it clean, man. We're not here to try
I'm
to like MCA. Have any like you know type of special surprises whenever you call in too. But so anyway, this is strictly serious sports talk. Don't try to come in talk that nonsense. We're not having it. All right, so we do. All right. Anyway, follow us on Twitter at the number 12. THMAN Sports. Follow us on Facebook as well, facebook.com/talkingsports with the 12th man or 12th man sports as well. Gentlemen, let's recap an amazing week of college football, a lot of exciting matchups. We're going to figure out if we found out about some teams that are frauds or serious or if it's too early or if it's kind of like the first game jitters, man. So, Rob, kick it off, bro. What about that first week in college football, bro?
Well, yeah, I'm going to start with the four top 25 matchups, and then I'm going to talk a little bit about the SEC West. That's going to be my recap. First, let's look at the Auburn-Washington game. Obviously, Auburn came out blazing, looked like they were going to, you know, just blow Washington out of the house. But in the second half, Washington matched the physicality of Auburn. And really, to a large degree, they really outplayed Auburn in the second half. They just didn't convert in the red zone, which really cost them with some turnovers and also some missed field goals in the red zone, which really cost Washington that game. But Washington, obviously, you know, they're not out of the playoff running because they had opportunities to win a game of that magnitude on the road, but they're still going to probably pretty close after running the table with the rest of the year and winning the Pac-12 championship. But with such a really good showing on the road and a matchup of that magnitude, they didn't quite eliminate themselves from the national championship playoffs. Like I said, they had opportunities where they could have won that game. And their front seven is really good on defense as well. So Washington, they really did show some things even in the loss. On the other hand, Michigan, yeah. I was not impressed. They only lost by 7 points to Notre Dame. But, going into that game, I was expected to see this vaunting Michigan defense. And asking Notre Dame defense showed me a lot more than what Michigan's defense did, and was not impressed with Shea Patterson either at the quarterback position. Actually, I thought when the backup came in, Dylan McCaffrey, Christian McCaffrey's younger brother, excuse me with my voice, but I was actually a little bit more impressed with him as well. But overall, was not impressed with Michigan at all on that road game. So I know JQ
you
loved to hear that.
Loved it. Yeah, Braylon Edwards was fine.
Braylon Edwards
was
not
definitely
either.
Yeah. Absolutely. But definitely was not all that impressed with Michigan at all. I was thinking we were going to see a much better Michigan team this year with improvement at the quarterback position and at defense. But overall, I thought Notre Dame just really controlled them on the line of scrimmage. And I think the 7-point loss, the game wasn't as close as the score indicates, in my opinion. Notre Dame pretty much controlled that game throughout on both sides of the line of scrimmage. So hats off to Notre Dame and congrats to them. I was really impressed with the way they played and unimpressed with Michigan. But still a long season, so we'll see how it goes, see how it unfolds. Next top 25 matchup, LSU and Miami on Sunday night. Obviously, LSU looked better than I thought they would have looked, and Miami not as good as well, but that's still one game. I don't know if it's an indication of LSU is going to be better than we think or Miami not as good as what we thought they would be. Actually, I thought Miami was going to be absolutely. So, obviously, we knew LSU was going to be good on defense, and they showed it. And really, the last two touchdowns that Miami scored, LSU had taken a few of their key defensive players out of the game already. And actually, they brought a few of them. They brought those same guys back in to hold on to win at the end. But those two touchdowns that Miami scored, Greedy Williams was out of the game. Devin White was out of the game. So they had taken a few of their better defensive players out of the game at that point. And Miami was able to get a couple of touchdowns on the board. But overall, impressed with LSU's defense in that matchup. However, LSU did lose their best pass rusher. He's out for the year. Caleb on Chase on. So that's going to be a big blow to LSU's defense going forward. So it did turn out he had a major knee injury, and he's out for the year. So that announcement came out on today. So impressive win by LSU, but they took a big blow in the loss, losing their best pass rusher. So we'll see. They have somebody in the wings that can kind of step up and fill his spot. And last but not least, last night, Florida State and Virginia Tech. I tell you what, the quarterback for Florida State was, I thought, horrendous last night.
Horrible.
Yeah, he was awful.
He was just real rough.
Give a lot of credit to a young Virginia Tech defense. I thought it was going to take them a little while to gel. We talked about that on the show last week. But I don't know if it's a matter of Virginia Tech's defense was that good or Francois was that bad or a little bit of both. But you got to give credit to Virginia Tech to being able to go on the road and dominating the way they did. And like I said, Francois was very unimpressive for Florida State. So that's just a quick recap on those four games. But the SEC West, is flat out loaded. I mean, not only we talked about the LSU route of Miami, we talked about Auburn's win over Washington, Alabama blowing out Louisville, Ole Miss beating Texas Tech, Mississippi State beating Stephen F. Austin 63-6, Texas A&M beating Northwestern State 59-7, Arkansas over Eastern Illinois 55-20. So that's the SEC West knocked off two top 10 foes. They beat Miami and Washington. They beat two other Power 5 opponents, and then they pounded three cupcakes, which obviously they creamed three cupcakes. So you look at what the SEC West has done. It looked like that division probably still the best overall division in college football.
Nice.
Yeah, for sure. And I hate to say it, but I have to give them that, and I've been giving them that. And I'll talk about the division I thought was close to them that really, you know, didn't live up to it. But for me, you know, for the most part, outside of, you know, the Big Ten and really the state of Florida, I feel like everybody just pretty much took care of business the way they were supposed to. But what is going on with the state of Florida's football teams? I mean, we're not really expecting a really thing from the University of Florida this year. We saw Miami go in and get just absolutely blown out versus LSU.
Sure.
I told you, I believed in Joe Burrow's, and, you know, he managed that game. And, you know, they got a lot of big runs, but he didn't do stupid stuff to take them out of position to have those big runs. And I think that's just one of the things that LSU was missing. I didn't know they had lost their best defensive pass rusher. That's a big blow to my pick, and I'm going to the college football playoffs, so I'll lose to him unless they can replace him. But Miami and Florida State and back-to-back nights, the power schools in the ACC and Florida just looking horrendous. I mean, there's no other words for it. Rozier and Francois do not look like they should be starting quarterbacks for anybody. You might want to have a package for them to run and do some things, but they look a lot like JT Barrett.
One thing in South Florida is the best school in the state of Florida.
Wow. Yeah, and I mean, but they have the best talent in the country. So to watch them, to me, they have the best high school talent in the country from top to bottom, the state of Florida. I just don't understand how Florida State and Miami come out there and look like that. I was really underwhelmed with them. Not that I'm a Florida State fan, because I'm not, but I do like Miami. You know, I picked LSU. I just thought LSU with that defense and Joe Burrow would be able to do what they did. But I did not expect those performances from those two. And then to wrap this up, the Big Ten East just looking a hot mess. I mean, Michigan State barely winning on the last minute. Penn State barely winning at the last minute. Michigan looking bad. And I'll give them a little bit of time because that's a new system with Shea. And it's one thing to be over the summer, but it's a whole different thing to be there for a year or two to get indoctrinated and what the program is about and how it's going to run. So I think he's going to trend upward as the season goes forward. That's a tough matchup to go into Notre Dame and win. I have no love for him, but I'm just going to be objective. That's a tough road game. But you just, when you put all that together with what happened, Maryland, you know, helping to save the day for the Big Ten East by beating Texas 2 years in a row now, is just not what you would have expected walking into this, you know, first weekend of the football season. And, you know, the sky's not necessarily always falling because the Penn State still won and Michigan State still won. But come on, man. I mean, Utah State and App State, I mean, I know App State is decent. They went to the Big House about a decade ago now, I believe, and knocked off Michigan. But just the home opener, you can't be winning by a touchdown in the last couple of minutes. And you talk about the Big Ten East being one of the tougher divisions. It's not good for Ohio State, really, you know, because they're in the lose-lose. If they win those games, they're supposed to. If they lose that game, it's a big upset because if those teams don't come to play, then those wins don't mean anything. So it definitely was not a good weekend for the Big Ten East and just on the polar opposite side for what you talked about with the SEC West. So that's what I took away from it. The state of Florida, just abysmal. And it's really just abysmal, if I'm being honest. And the Big Ten East looking a hot mess.
Yeah, that's crazy. Just to kind of piggyback on that, too, it's, you know, you have high ups for Florida State. I'm a huge Willie Taggart fan, thinking they were going to come through and just, you know, do some good things to kind of turn around the program. And like you said, Rob, you got to give credit to, you know, Virginia Tech, man. That defense is young, hungry. They were definitely ready to play, man. And then, you know, Baldwin, the quarterback last year, he maybe has to be the option, man. I mean, Francois just looked a little tentative. I don't know if he just wasn't just – I mean, I know there were some, you know, a couple of bad calls, some one touchdown that looked like a touchdown that wasn't really, you know, just a couple of things that kind of happened that didn't go Florida State's way. But like you said, JQ, just did not look like they should be starting. Rozier or Francois should be starting. I do want to talk about Texas, guys. And, again, you know, Tom Herman, man, you talk about a guy that was kind of famed, man, and kind of turned around Texas. And he's kind of falling flat in his face, man. So I'm kind of – part of me is kind of happy for what they did to Charlie Strong and you know, kind of where I'm going with that, man. So it's like, you know, yeah, I'm not, you know, Texas, you can suck it too, man. So, again, man, I'm kind of happy that Maryland kind of got the best of them, man, because they did them wrong, man. And then, you know, they're giving Herman all kinds of opportunities and just kind of figuring out that just because you're Texas, you still got to, like, coach them up too, man. And then finally, my last point that I definitely want to. Yeah, I'm so excited about Texas. I kind of lost train of thought here, but I'll bring it back too, man. But again, just a great college football weekend and stuff like that. Go ahead, Rob. You about to say?
Every year you think Texas is going to turn the corner. I mean, you talk about Florida.
It seems like
you talk about recruiting. and how talented the state of Florida is, but Texas is the same way. And you just think every year you're going to turn the corner because you know there's a lot of football talent in the state of Texas. But every year they just come out unimpressive. And it's just mind-boggling when you look at the talent that comes out of the state of Texas, and at the flagship program is still struggling to turn the corner. It's mind-boggling to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say this last thing too, just real quickly about Miami and LSU, and we talked about how they were just overmatched, and that's kind of gonna. I think that's gonna kind of again look at Mark Richt, man, because again, this is why Georgia got rid of him, man, because he just couldn't get that next level, man. And you look at the way Miami, you had all this time to prepare for LSU, and not to say that LSU wasn't no slouch, obviously, but just, you know, you could have put a better showing against that. So, just again, just one of the situations where it looks like Georgia made the right decision in hiring Kirby Smart, man. So, interesting to say the least. All right, let's talk about number 15 USC at number 13 Stanford. And again, I mean, we talked about giving Washington credit for going and trying to, like, flex their muscles, but this is a situation, too. I mean, who's the best out of the Pac-12, man, if you will? I mean, is USC, is it Stanford? What do you think about this, JQ?
You know what? I said USC, but given what I saw this past weekend, I mean, I agree with Rob. You know, it's to take those blows and be able to withstand them on the road, basically the de facto home game for Auburn, and make it a game, really you just shot yourself in the foot. If you want to be honest, yes, Auburn got the W, but I feel like it was more that Washington lost that game than Auburn won that game. It's how I feel about how that game unfolded. And there's a nuance to that when you talk about a game when you're watching how you project moving forward. I think that Washington defense is going to be really fast and ready to fly around. But the USC-Stanford game, I don't know. I just don't know about either one of those teams. I watched the piece of that Stanford game,
right?
And they routed them, but they were supposed to route that team. But there was nothing that really jumped out. I think Bryce Love was really pedestrian in that game. I think he ended up having, like, one really decent run. But outside of that, you know, they had him bottled up pretty well. I'm just a non-believer in some of those schools that, like a Stanford, and I'm sorry, Stanford fans, they have blips on the radar where they're up high for a second, then they go down. But a lot of times they're kind of more in the middle, and it's hard, you know, with the academics there at Stanford to always be able to field the best team. I just am going to go with USC in their speed over Stanford. I'm just not a believer. I feel like I forget who Stanford played, so forgive me. But they bottled up Bryce Love. And I feel like if USC can do that.
San Diego State,
yeah, thank you. State without those running backs, without the pennies of the world that they've been having.
Yeah.
I just feel like if USC can copy that same kind of blueprint on defense, I feel like they have way more talent on offense than San Diego State has to stay in that game and win that game. So I'm going to go with USC in that game. Even though I think it's at Stanford.
Yeah, I tell you what, I totally agree. This is a hard game for me to make a decision on because, actually, I was unimpressed with both teams this past weekend. I was unimpressed with USC against UNLV, and I was unimpressed with Stanford against San Diego State. And I think the difference for me as far as picking the winner in this game, KJ Costello, I still expect big things out of him, the quarterback of Stanford. And the quarterback for USC, JT Daniels, this guy actually supposed to be a senior in high school, and he's starting for USC as a true freshman. But technically, he's supposed to be a senior
crazy.
In high school. And so I'm going to say that's the difference. Stanford is at home. KJ Costello, like I said, high expectations for him. And I think that'll be the slight difference. So I'm going to give the edge to Stanford at home in this game. Although it's really tough for me to make a prediction on this game, I will admit that. I do think overall USC may be more talented, but I'm going to go with the home field advantage, and I'm going to go with KJ Costello at the quarterback position for Stanford in a 3-point win at home.
Right. I can't be mad at that. I could see that going that way and not having a problem with it. Like, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I could see that happening. It's 15 versus 13. This is a true pick-up game. If you're out here gambling on this game, you are a degenerate.
Yeah, but if you look at the history of the USC under Clay Helton here the last 3 to 4 years, they seem to start slow and finish strong. And and based on what I saw against UNLV, they didn't really look that impressive. But the talent is definitely there at USC. They're loaded from a personnel standpoint. Obviously, you got the young quarterback, as I just mentioned, who, like I said, should be actually a senior in high school. So I mean, other than the quarterback issue, and obviously he's talented, but he's still a senior in high school. So that's my only question mark with there. But wow. USC is loaded, so this definitely is a game that was very hard for me to pick.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Talking Pac-12 too, and I feel bad for Summer, man. He just messed up Khalil Tate, man. Khalil Tate's supposed to be kind of, man, he kind of like totally crippled him, man. So that wasn't good versus BYU, man. So I don't know what's up with that.
Yeah.
That's a little side note too. All right, let's talk about this. And I'm
UCLA lost too the first game with Chip Kelly.
Cincinnati,
yeah,
baby.
Too, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Congrats, yo. Let's talk about this. I'm going to take something I heard about this too, because we're going to talk about Nick Saban, how he lashed out on Maria Taylor. And I guess the question is, and this is interesting, I always give a shout out to ladies because, again, a lot of ladies are doing that sideline reporting job, and we give them props, and it's great to have that opportunity. But somebody asked the question too, if it was a male, do you think he would have to apologize? And I thought it was a very interesting question too. Now, obviously, the fact is, I mean, she had to ask the question, and whether or not Nick Saban, you know, was like, you know, tired of asking the question because he's dealing with the same whatever, I did think that was an interesting point too, because if it was a male, maybe you wouldn't have to worry about that because, you know, he was just, you know, probably sick of that question. And
he's tripping.
Obviously he's trying. I know. I just wanted to kind of bring the other side of the equation too, because again, you have two quarterbacks that are clearly, you know, obviously Tua is kind of doing his thing too. And maybe he wants to have Jalen Hurts for a couple things too as well. But I do wonder if it was a male, if the backlash should be kind of as strong, if you will, too. So again, we don't have to answer that. I just thought that was kind of interesting that somebody brought that up too. So, what are your thoughts on that, JQ?
I take that back. I think he does apologize either way. And the reason why I don't think it matters, I think he says the same thing to a male because he's Nick Saban. And he feels like at his point, you know, I think he just does what he wants to do. Regardless, he's like, yeah, you want to get mad? I can just revoke your access to the Alabama program. You don't want that. Like he can be a bully in that situation to where people want to be able to be around the program and have be able to get there for those specials for game day and for Fox and all the other and for ESPN. So I feel like he would have said that either way. So I think he still would have had to apologize. I don't think people have been as upset about him doing it because it was a woman as a woman. But I think he still would have had to apologize. I think everybody would have said, look, Nick, you got a machine going down there. The only thing that we have to ask you about, after you blow Louisville out, mind you, he just destroyed Louisville. It's not like a tense game where the quarterback's messed up and he had to be, you know, protective of him about it. Like, they walked over Louisville. So the only question we have about you and your program is how you're going to handle your quarterbacks. Any reporter, male, female, blue, yellow, black, white, or red, if they're worth their salt, that's one of the first two or three questions they're going to ask if it's not going to be the first one, because it's really the only one that we have about your program given your track record of success and being able to bring guys in, five stars, and you know, not have to put up as much, and they plug and play them and go back to having a really dominant team. You know what I mean? So it's like, what else did you think they were going to ask you about that in that game? So I think he would have had that same reaction. I think he would have had to have a phone call to apologize, whether it was a male or female.
Great analysis. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I do think you know, I personally felt bad because it was a young black female reporter. I will just say that. So that there's a part of me that that, you know, that to me made it worse as well. But I totally agree he would have responded the same way because that is what evil Nikki does. You know, he's going to go off on your way to the press conference or whether it's a sideline tirade like he had the other night. And, I mean, like JQ said, that is the only question after that game. And plus, I actually thought she acted in a manner, in an appropriate manner as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, I just think, but to me, I just felt worse because it's a young black female reporter that, you know, he went off on like that on the sidelines. And I just think it was uncalled for. And it just adds more to the fire for more reasons for hating Alabama and hating evil Nikki as well. But I just thought that was that was just childish. It was uncalled for. He wants to be a bully. He wants to be the face of college football. In a lot of ways, he is. which we should expect more out of him in that particular situation as well. And shucks, you just won 51-14. Why are you going off on a reporter?
Right.
I mean,
that's what I'm saying.
I don't get it. And the second thing is, just come out and say Tua is your starting quarterback. I mean, he started the game. He played most of the game. I mean, just come out and say Tua is your starting quarterback. He is the better quarterback.
Hmm? He don't want Hurst to transfer, and that's all it's about.
Exactly. That's all it's about.
Yeah, go ahead. Tua is your guy. I know he's come out and say Tua is going to start this coming week, but Hurts will still play in spots. But Tua is your guy. I ain't going to attempt to say his last name, but Tua is his guy.
We're both staying away from that. And I got to say, you know what's crazy? And that's the thing, too. I know I can't believe you're hating on your ex-coach, Rob. I'm just joking. But I will say about Alabama, it's crazy that half of the squad that they played were freshmen last year, and they're now coming into – that's what's even crazy, guys, which is like – you said the machine's going to keep going, you know, and whatever he has to use, whatever motivation to keep those guys focused, that's what he's probably using, Rob. He's like, you lost 50. No, it's not enough, man. You know, some coaches, they just got it. They need that extra, like, whatever to kind of get that team motivated, man. So that's what I thought. Even though they kind of clearly were in control of that game, you got to use whatever you can to kind of keep that team motivated. You're never going to be happy with it, no matter what, man. So that's kind of how I did that. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, he was clowning.
100%.
He was clowning.
Hey, Rob, Arizona State shows off an explosive offense. Go ahead, Rob. Go ahead. I'm sorry. You want to finish that last thought as well.
Herman Edwards in his debut with a 49-7 victory over Texas San Antonio. I've been curious to see how he's going to turn out to be as a head coach in college football. Obviously, Manny Wilkins threw for 4 touchdowns. He's a 3-year starter at the quarterback position for Arizona State. Tutor Nikhil Harry, in Arizona State. Routed Texas San Antonio. One of my high school classmates is the head coach at Texas San Antonio. But, you know, I love Frank Wilson. Keep climbing.
You
went against a tough opponent. Herman Edwards still wasn't happy. Obviously, he had a little bit of Nick Saban in him, but he didn't go off on a sideline reporter. But, you know, he obviously said his team still played very sloppy. He said it was still ugly to watch at times. So, but, you know, he said the big plays is really what kept him in winning the game. You know, he wasn't really happy that they wasn't able to put together any long, methodical drives. You know, most of their scores were based off of big plays. But I guess you got to find something in the 49-7 win against somewhat of a Creed and Puff opponent, even though Texas San Antonio went to a bowl last year.
But that's why I said stop it, because wake me up when they do that against the Pac-12. And maybe this weekend, and to go back to the Big Ten East that I didn't really think about when I was making that comment, maybe in his sloppiness, come on, Herm, for one, I'm going to take a big splash play instead of going 8 to 10 plays every time. So you don't know that you couldn't keep a sustained drive going because you got big plays. That's why I was like, come on, Herm, like, you're tripping, brother. I understand that you're trying to keep him motivated, but, you know, if you get big splash plays that keep you from doing sustained drives, you can't be mad at it. I mean, it has some sloppiness in the game, but that wide receiver is a true stud. I'll talk about it again. I'll give them more credit even at home next week against Michigan State. If they do that and they do that as they start playing the middle upper echelon Pac-12 teams, they're supposed to do that to UT San Antonio. I don't care if I was coaching them and making my debut or return to coaching against UTSA in Tempe. We're supposed to do that. We have a better team by a wide margin. And no disrespect to your friend, but he's not going to recruit the caliber of players that Arizona State's going to get. So, I mean, I'm going to give him a golf clap and say, okay, you took care of what you're supposed to do. I need to see what you're going to do against Michigan State and what you're going to do against the Pac-12. Then I will say, okay, Herm is, you know, got it kind of cooking there in Tempe for Arizona State. But until then, I'm just, you know, that's what I'm saying. It's a lose-lose for the big teams when you play somebody like that. If you win, you're supposed to. If you lose, the sky's falling. Nobody's really going to give you a ton of credit for beating the cream puff like you're supposed to.
It's true. All right. That's a good call. That's 100%. I'm just sitting back about it. Great, great call. So, again, just JQ is going off. I love it. Let's talk about Cal. I was going to say something, but we'll go to the next topic. Here we got 15 minutes left, guys, in the show. Cal forces 4 turnovers in a win over UNC. What about that, JQ?
Man, I won't say what I was going to say. because I don't want to. I mean, I appreciate Rob putting the topics for the show together, and I didn't want it to come off like I was saying something negative about him. But the broad brushstroke of America doesn't give two shits about Cal and North Carolina playing in football.
Hey, now if they play a good basketball game.
You know, Andre's wife is a big Cal fan, so be careful.
100%.
I understand that. But Aaron Rodgers ain't walking through that door. It's all I'm trying to say. So we're talking about Cal and UNC. It just doesn't go against the broad landscape of college football. I mean, that's good for them, I guess, in a way. Can they do something in the Pac-12? I don't think so. North Carolina's still dealing with the blowback from those sanctions. I don't know how much longer Fedora's got in North Carolina if he's looking to jump ship. But I just can't get excited about it. I mean, like I said, you got to win against North Carolina. That's great. If you did that in basketball, we'd be more excited. But in football, we're like, okay.
Yeah.
JQ, he said he's sorry. He's cool, Bob. He's cool, Bev. Okay, sorry.
They don't have Mitch Trubisky walking through that door for UNC either.
Right.
Yeah. But I guess if there's one thing to look at from the Cal perspective, this is not your typical Cal team that we've used to seeing for the last 10 to 15 years where, you know, they'll try to come out and outscore you 55-50 in order for them to win. obviously, you know, it's not your Sonny Dykes Cal's team. So they actually – you know, playing much better defense, and they're putting more emphasis on that side of the football. And so, I mean, that would be the one thing I'll take away from this Cal team. So it'll be real intriguing. You know, I don't really have high expectations. I don't think any of us have that, you know, have high expectations for Cal. But it'll be intriguing to see if their defense can do this against some of the upper echelon opponents in the Pac-12. So jury is definitely still out on Cal.
The jury ain't even been selected yet.
But it's definitely a different looking Cal team than what we're used to seeing in the last 15 years, where they're putting more emphasis on the defensive side of the ball.
I'm sorry, Dre. you know what I can think of? I was watching the NBA draft, and Fran Fraschilla was talking about somebody from across the seas. He was like, this guy's 2 years from being 2 years away. That's how I feel about Cal football. Like, you know, the jury is not even – the letters are not even been sent to the jury pool yet on Cal. We still got a long way to go now.
You say he's 2 years from now. I love it. Hey, gentlemen, we got 12 minutes here. Let's talk really quickly about the Penn State needing that overtime to beat Appalachian State. And Appalachian State, man – I got to, like, kind of tie in something here because I'm actually happy that we got Woody Allen. Not Woody Allen, I'm sorry. Oh, my gosh. I just freaking lost his name. My coach for the defense of Georgia Tech. But anyway, they've been playing well, man. And what's up with that? I mean, Penn State, is that just kind of nerves? What's up with that, Rob? Tell me your thoughts about that game.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think, for one, you know, obviously Appalachian State, they've done this before where they played – you know, upper echelon opponents and played them really competitive. Uh-huh. You saw with Michigan. I mean, there's even been the time where they played LSU tough that I can recall too, you know, and seeing them play. But Penn State was very unimpressive. And obviously you can see with some of the losses, Mike Gesicki, Saquon Barkley, I can go on and on with a few players that they've lost. And basically the only player that I know of that's still there is Trace McSorley. And to me, it looks like that they were a little bit overrated in the preseason rankings. Obviously, the season is still young, but I was not impressed with Penn State, which I guess if you're an Ohio State fan, you should be pretty happy because Penn State didn't look that great. Michigan didn't look that great. Michigan State did not look that great. And even Wisconsin, in my opinion, it won, but I wasn't overly impressed with them either. And so from that standpoint, I was pretty impressed with Ohio State and the way they dominated, especially on the offensive side of the football. And I was impressed with Dwayne Haskins, too. And if you're an Ohio State fan, you have to be pretty pleased with the way the rest of the conference is looking so far, you know, as far as winning the Big Ten title is concerned. And so definitely those out-of-conference games – like TCU is really going to come in. They're going to have to – Ohio State is going to really hope that those schools do really well, you know, from a rating standpoint based on what we saw in Big Ten in week one.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. The only thing that throws some water on Ohio State is I saw them give up a 80-yard touchdown run, a 70-yard touchdown run, where that dude left them twice. And at that point, I think they had taken some of the starters out in the middle, you know, to move first because they were rolling. But, yeah, the defense is going to have a tough week this week, and I'm glad for it. And that's something I don't think is artificial, like we talked about with the coaches bringing stuff up. It's like, come on, bro. I think that's real, but that offense looks really good. I talked about it earlier, and I just looked at Penn State's schedule. Guess what? They play Pittsburgh next week. And you say, okay, that's just Pittsburgh. But in the state of Pennsylvania, Penn State and Pittsburgh is a big college football game. And I wonder if coaches now are going to start maybe thinking twice about, you know, they feel like they're getting a somewhat tune-up before a big rivalry game or, a big out-of-conference game. But is it really affecting the kids with the focus, especially the first game of the year, trying to get ready for it and be ready for that game, knowing you got to add to the second game that's a much bigger consequence for you. I wonder if they'll try to take that in a little bit more consideration with the scheduling because App State is a tough team, but if you're Michigan State and you got designs on upending Penn State and Michigan and Ohio State in the Big Ten East, you got to look better than that. Now you got to look better than that. You got to perform better than they did. End of the day, maybe 10 weeks from now, we don't even think about how close it was. You just look at the W on their record and you figure out, you go from there. But the last piece of that is, as an Ohio State fan, which I am, unabashed, a piece of you wants to have a somewhat easier road to the title, but to Rob's point, to have those games somewhat be tough and those other teams play well for it to mean something when you start juggling those six teams in the hat for those last four spots, so like it seems to come down to every year, you know, if they don't have that Big Ten East part of the equation in their strength of schedule, it's going to hold them back from somebody else that has a greater strength of schedule from their conference or out-of-conference play. So I think they got to go and beat TCU bad, given what we've seen out of, you know, the Big Ten East so far, in order to kind of have that resume booster. So I agree. A piece of you is like, oh, yeah, Big Ten East, here we come. We're going to the Big Ten title game again. But that piece of you that wants to go further looks and says the Big Ten East has to be better for that resume to look better.
Right, Rob.
Yep. What? I thought I gave my comments to that topic already.
Okay, cool. All right, let's talk about this here. 8 minutes here. So now we're going to switch to the NFL, and let's talk about the Raiders and that interesting trade for Khalil Mack, too. And you talk about – I know the Raiders gave up – I think they gave, like, what, 2 first-round picks, second, third. I got to look at the actual trade. And I had a Raiders fan talk to me. He was just like, he now is getting over it, which is crazy, too. He's like, I saw the press conference. I'm still upset about this, too. And, you know, you're kind of getting a kind of solid thing, man. So I guess the question is it a huge mistake for the Raiders actually making that move? So I'll let you start off with that, Rob, and I'll make sure I keep track of this, too. So go ahead with that, Rob.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm still very surprised that Oakland would, you know, pass rushers like this, you don't get in trades in free agency. You have to draft them, and they stay on your team. So I'm very surprised, you know, that Oakland didn't pay the price to keep him because, I mean, Khalil Mack is a stud as far as rushing 100%. The passer and probably one of the best in the business. So, I just have a problem when you give up a player of that magnitude. I know they got 2 first-round picks in return. They got a 3rd-rounder and a 6th-rounder in return. That's a lot of picks in return for that they're getting. But I still don't agree with, you know, trading your best defensive player, probably your best player on your roster, period. And, I mean, to me that just knocks them down another notch in the AFC West. I don't agree with it. I know you're getting 2 first-round picks and the 2 throw-in picks, but I think that was a bad move for the Oakland Raiders doing that. I think you got to pay the guy. You got to keep him on your roster, a player of that magnitude. And you got to give the Bears credit for having the guts to go out and making that kind of move. And
yes,
and you got to wonder, Rodgers. You know. Yeah. And you still, I don't know about Leonard Floyd's health, but, you know, the Bears had a really good defense last year. They just struggled scoring points last year. So, I mean, this makes a really good defense. I mean, their secondary was really good last year. They had one of the top defenses in the NFL. They just had one of the worst offenses in the NFL last year. So if the defense gets better, and if they can see some progression with the offense, you're talking about a team that might be able to challenge Minnesota and Green Bay in that division. I think it makes it very interesting in that division. And I definitely think the Lions are the worst team in that division now.
Well, I mean, you talk about it. I agree. I mean, I got a couple points on that one. I agree. if you look at it from the Chicago standpoint first, you got Aaron Rodgers, you got now Kirk Cousins, you got Matthew Stafford. So if you're Chicago and you're pretty good with Eddie Jackson and those boys in the back end, you get another pass rusher. You got to do that when you have a division full of pretty good quarterbacks making a ton of money between the three of them. So you got to give Chicago, again, a lot of credit for that. I agree with you, Rob, but I guess now I'm looking at it from the flip side. And if you're John Gruden and McKenzie, are you looking at that roster and saying, do we give him that kind of money when we don't feel like we're close enough to being the team that we need to be to win it all? So
that's what it was.
I don't necessarily agree to give up that kind of talent, but you put that kind of money into one guy when you're looking across the rest of the roster, like, even if we keep him, he's not enough to put us over the top. So I wonder about that. And then I also wonder, what does that do to that locker room? They talk about it's going to be hurt a bit. I believe that Derek Carr and Khalil Mack got drafted the same year. If they weren't there a year apart, but they were really tight. And you're talking about the leader of your offense and the leader of your defense being really tight and saying, hey, we're going to do this together and bring this team back. And then you ship one of them out. What does that do to the chemistry in that locker room? We talk about chemistry all the time. So even if they feel like they're not quite there yet, it's just that piece of it. When you trade away that kind of talent and he has that kind of rapport with your leader, your offense, your quarterback in that locker room, and they're the leaders, you know, your best defensive line player and your quarterback are the leaders in that locker room, and you trade one of them up over money when everybody feels like he's worth the money, that to me is what tips the scale over we're not ready yet. You got to kind of keep some kind of continuity in that locker room. Those were the guys that you needed to keep. And I just – John Gruden is doing his thing, and that's who he is. He wants to put his own imprint on it. But it can't be at any cost.
100%. Great analysis. JQ is on it. Both of you guys are always on it too. And like I said, the thing is, whenever we talk about the money aspect, you're going to freaking Las Vegas. You're going to get more than enough. You'll make that up. So I agree with you, man. It's like chemistry is more important. I mean, even if you think he's not the piece, you got to keep those two together, man. I mean, so I think that's a poor move. You said it, Rob. You said it, JQ. If Al Davis is there, that does not go down, 100%, man. He is keeping any player, man. So I just don't think that was a good move at all, man. So I think the Raiders, we always talk about them, they're the next team. I think they take another step back. And like you said, for what it's worth, Gruden may be putting your imprint, but that is not – you always want to acquire talent, guys, not get rid of it, man. So that's my call on that too. Hey, Rob, we got about 2 minutes and 50-something seconds. If you guys can be both brief, like 30 seconds apiece on Saquon or one of you guys can take that, I'll let you take that, JQ, and then we'll let Rob wrap up and get ready for the OT. So go ahead with that.
Yeah, I mean, for Saquon, I think he landed in a good spot with a team that on paper was bad last year, but they got the pieces and they had Odell out. If they're getting him back and he's got his money now, I really think he can have 1,000 to 1,100, 1,150-yard rushing season and then chip in 300 to 400 yards receiving because he's just that dynamic. Every year you have a team that bounces back from way back, and the Giants could be that team. And I see that offense is going to be just flat-out loaded. And, I mean, if they can get Eli to just be a pulse of what he was before, just not mess it up, I mean, I think he could have a really good year for New York.
Rob, we already got the OC. Go ahead.
Yeah,
OC.
Actually, I totally agree. When you look at he only played in one preseason game. He was impressive in that one game. But I expect a big year out of Saquon Barkley. I really do. It's similar to what we saw out of Zeke Elliott 2 years ago, Leonard Fournette last year. He can be in that same, you know, conversation when it comes to rookie running backs and the kind of year they have. And actually, I have a chance that he can have a bigger impact because I think he will have a bigger impact as far as running the ball as well as catching the ball out of the backfield, more so than what they did in the last couple of years too. I actually think the Giants can really be a legitimate team as far as being the second-best team in that division, and I think he can be a big part of that. And I think they have an outside chance of challenging the Eagles too because I think the Eagles are still dealing with a lot of injuries on that roster right now. So I think they have an outside chance of challenging – of going from worst to first in that division and challenging the Eagles for the division title. At worst, I think they'll be the second-best team in the division. And then Barkley will be a big part of that.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, OT, bro.
60 seconds. Yep, 60 seconds.
Oh, OT. Ladies and gentlemen, we thank you all for tuning in to tonight's show again. Next week we're going to be back on the air on Tuesday night as well. That's going to be Tuesday night, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 10 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. We're getting ready to go into our OT portion. Unfortunately, we can't give you this portion of our show live. So click on the same link on tomorrow and get the rest of our football coverage for getting you ready for this coming weekend. We got some predictions and got some other football conversations we're going to cover in our OT portion, so you don't want to miss it. Good night, people. Make sure you join us again on live on next Tuesday night. Good night.
Yes, sir. Good people. I'll see y'all next week. Be safe.
No charges? None of that, JQ?
No, not quite yet. I need to see him 1 week first.
I love it. Hey, that's how we kick off the start of college football and ready to recap that and get ready for the pros here. All right, so we talked about Saquon. I just want to definitely just kind of piggyback on that as well. I think I agree with you, Rob, going to have a great season as well, or do pretty well because, again, Odell Beckham, he's happy. So it's a good space, man, right now, too. So we'll talk about that. And also what's going to happen with the Giants and if they did make a mistake in not passing over Sam Darnold. So we'll talk about that, too. Let's talk about the Rams here real quick. I guess the question is, will they be a disappointment? And we can kind of tag on to the Aaron Donald new deal with that as well, too. So I got to say, on paper, they look like the ish, right? They made some trades. It looks like they're going all in. But, papers doesn't win championships, as we guys know, too. So what say you about this, JQ? Kind of let this will they be a disappointment this season?
I guess my thing is, what does disappointment mean? If they don't win the Super Bowl, it's a disappointment, then yes. And I think that's probably where they are, given the money that they spent on that team. To me, they went really the Seattle Seahawks manner of it. We're going to import a lot of defensive talent while our quarterback is on a rookie deal. We've already given our running back a good deal in Todd Gurley. And I think anything less than even appearing in the Super Bowl is going to be a disappointment for them. You talk about, getting Tlaib and getting and resigning Donald and getting that fool, the other defensive tackle they got. His name is
Ndamukong
Suh. They've got all the makings. I mean, you saw Cup flash last year. You saw Woods flash last year. You go and get Brandon Cooks. If Jared Goff can keep taking that step forward, you feel like there's no reason for us not, especially if we talk about Seattle being a down team, Arizona not knowing what they have as well. They have a division that's very winnable for them. And San Francisco with Garoppolo, yeah, but they still are a young team trying to find their way as well. So you feel like at the very least they're supposed to win that division going away in the NFC West. So I don't see them not winning that division by at least 3 or 4 games. And it just comes down to, can they knock off the other NFC powerhouses in the playoffs? But if they don't make the Super Bowl, I think it's a disappointment.
So Super Bowl is what sets the disappointment. Go ahead, Rob.
Mm-hmm.
Well, historically, we've seen in the NFL when teams spend this kind of money in free agency, it never works out. But on paper, I have the Rams going to the NFC Championship game and losing. That's just my prediction. So to some degree, that's a successful team's in most organizations' eyes. Obviously, when you look at what they've gone out and invested in this team, I think anything less than winning the Super Bowl would be a disappointment when you look at what they've gone out and invested in their roster. And obviously with Jared Goff still being on the rookie deal, he was able to go ahead and break the bank for Aaron Donald. So obviously when you look at his contract, what was it, $146 million, $87 million guaranteed prior to Khalil Mack's contract as the highest paid player for a defensive player in NFL history. And obviously, with Goff being on his rookie deal still, you can go out and do that. But when you look at what they've gone out and invested, the money they've spent in Aaron Donald, when you look at getting Ndamukong Suh, when you look at getting Marcus Peters from Kansas City, and you look at getting Brandon Cooks, anything less than winning the Super Bowl will be a disappointment. But like I said, historically, we've seen this happen with NFL franchises, and it doesn't turn out to be a success. And I think they'll have more success than with the Washington Redskins when Daniel Snyder was dishing out all that money. They weren't even going to the playoffs. So I still think the Rams will be a playoff team. But I just don't think they'll win the Super Bowl, though. I think they'll come up just short of what their ultimate goal is.
But you know what I think about that? You're absolutely right. But all those guys you talk about were on the downside of their careers when they gave them big money foolishly. So, and I don't feel like that the Rams have done that by and large by locking up Donald, by getting those other guys you talked about. I would agree with you. I think it was a whole bunch of overpriced veterans. Like, that dude might have a year, maybe two left. But I feel like they got some dudes that are still, in their wheelhouse, so to speak. where they were able to load up smartly with Goff on a rookie contract. So that's, this is, might be the one time where it bucks that trend. But you're right, historically, that's not how it works out.
Yep. Good call.
Yeah.
Good call.
But I will say Ndamukong Suh is more so, I would say he's on the down end of his career. And Brandon Cooks, for whatever reason, in my opinion, is overrated. And that's why you see the Saints have gotten rid of him, and I think that's why you've seen the Patriots have gotten rid of him now too. And I mean, he is a he's a deep threat. He can get past you, but he can't catch the ball if somebody's on him. You know, he's not one of those receivers that, you know, can do the back shoulders. He has to get past you in order to catch the ball. So he's not going to make the difficult catches. He's not great at catching the back shoulder routes and things of that nature. He has to utilize his speed in order to be successful. And like I said, you know, two teams with legitimate quarterbacks and legitimate offenses have both traded Brandon Cooks. So I do think Brandon Cooks is slightly overrated.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, I mean, I can't talk too much on because you obviously watched him be a Saints fan too. So, but all right. It's almost like, you know, go ahead.
The Saints thought Michael Thomas was more of a number one receiver, and that's why they got rid of Cooks. And I think the Patriots thought the same thing, that he wasn't tough enough.
Wow. All right. Interesting call. All right, gentlemen, we got we're keeping this going. Let's talk about five NFL coaches on the hot seat. Go ahead, Rob.
Let's see here. Obviously, you got to start with Hugh Jackson. I mean, he's 1-31 his first 2 years in the league. I mean, how he still has a job? It's, you go 1-15 his first year, 0-16 his second year. That's not funny, oh, man.
I know. That's
pretty. You're right.
Thinking, you know.
No, he's right. He's on my list. Yep.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, but I guess the question is, how much improvement do you need to see out of the Browns this year in order for him to keep his job? I don't think it's realistic to expect them to go to the playoffs, but how much if they win four, does he keep his job? I mean, if he win two, does he keep his job? That's a slight improvement. But
he win six.
Yeah, I would agree. It's probably somewhere around 5 to 6 at least in order for him to keep his job, because I still don't think legitimately you can expect this team to go to the playoffs. And even though they are very talented, there's a lot of talent on his roster. You know, you still have to wait till the quarterback position gets right too, and I don't know if you can expect that out of Tyrod Taylor and Baker Mayfield's first year too. So I'm just curious to know what the ownership of the general manager of the Cleveland Browns is thinking. How much does he have to improve? But I think ultimately, when you go 1-15 and you go 0-16 your first 2 years, you are on the hot seat. There's no doubt about it. And to say that he still has a job is pretty amazing. And because, you know, most black coaches, you go 1-31, you gone.
Yes, sir.
So to say he still has a job is pretty, I'm going to say Todd Bowles as well. Not quite as bad as Hugh Jackson, but 10-22 in his first year. In the same situation a little bit, going with a rookie quarterback in Sam Darnold. Jets have been at least competitive. I mean, they have been really close in a lot of these games. They just haven't had it on from the quarterback position. Defensively, Todd Bowles has done a phenomenal job. Even last year, masked a lot of the injuries that they had. They still kept them competitive in a lot of games. So I think for the most part, from a coaching job perspective, I thought he's done a phenomenal job of what he's had. But obviously, here in New York, and it comes down to wins and losses. And so you got to say that Todd Bowles is definitely on the hot seat, especially in that market. Dirk Koetter in Tampa Bay will be one for me. 14-18 in 2 years. And obviously, toward the end of last year, they really showed some really good improvement on the defensive side of the ball, thanks to Mike Smith, your Falcons' old coach, Andre. You know, did a phenomenal job in turning that around, and it's going to take that for them to be successful this year too, especially with Jameis Winston out these first 3 weeks of the season. So I would definitely think that he's on a hot seat, and I just can't see them finishing better than fourth place in the division. I mean, in my opinion, they're going to get off to a rough start without Winston, and it's going to be hard for them to recover this coming year. So I think obviously that puts him on a hot seat big time. And JQ may agree with me on this one, but I got Marvin Lewis on the hot seat too.
Yes.
And, Black Jesus.
Yeah, so I think, you know, he's there on the hot seat. And I don't know. How long has he been the coach of Cincinnati now? 15 years?
16, something too long?
Yeah, 16 years.
Too long.
That is amazing to say he's had that kind of longevity as a head coach. Playoffs.
Right. You know, I get worked up.
But obviously, I mean, I did see a good bit of that preseason game against the Bills. I mean, I'm sure you probably kept more up to date on the Bengals than I am. I was impressed with the Bengals offensively in that one game that I saw. You know, with them passing the ball down the field, John Ross looked like he might finally have a breakout year. And of course, you know, A.J. Green looked better than what he did last year as well. So we'll see from the Bengals' perspective. From a talent perspective, when you look at Geno Atkins on the defensive side of the ball, the weapons that we just talked about on offense, to me it looks like that they could be pretty competitive. But we'll see if Marvin Lewis can turn it around. But what it would take for him to keep his job, JQ, does he have to win a playoff game?
He got to win a playoff game, bro. He got
to
win a playoff game.
Playoffs. Yeah.
Got to win a playoff game.
And my last guy out of my five is Jay Gruden, the Washington Redskins. He's only made the playoffs once in 4 years. And obviously they got a big blow losing Darius Geis, so it looked like he was going to be the starting running back. And now you're going with the 50-year-old Adrian Peterson at the running back position.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a it's not off to a good start for the Redskins, but he will be my fifth guy, will be Jay Gruden.
Yeah, and you know what's crazy that we have all these guys. I only have two in common with him that we already have, so that's really eight that we have legitimately, I think, on the hot seat. I think Bowles just inherited a hot mess that he's not going to be. They're going to have to be patient. That's not his fault because he's not being the GM. And Dirk Cutter, he can always blame Jameis Winston for his foolishness and for them getting out to another bad start. So that's why I didn't put those two on mine. But what's up for the state of Ohio for just, you know, embracing mediocrity? How are they going to keep the two black dudes that ain't doing nothing? And they both on the hot seat. Hugh Jackson and Cleveland and Marvin Lewis in Cincinnati. That to me is just, it's just crazy, especially in the landscape of our country, what's happening. That's just a conundrum to me. It's like the one outlier, like, yeah, but Ohio's doing this. It's like, but why is Ohio doing that? Like, the one time I would agree with not doing that, they're doing it. I don't know how Marvin Lewis and Hugh Jackson still have jobs. But it is what it is. But I think Cleveland was just such a dumpster fire that gave him a little bit more leeway. I have no idea how you have a team for 15 years and don't win a playoff game in the National Football League and you keep your job. That only happens in Cincinnati. I will say that until the Cows come home. That only happens in Cincinnati. Mark Twain once said that if the world was going to come to an end, he would move to Cincinnati because it takes 20 years for everything to get to Cincinnati. That's a true quote from Mark Twain. So just put that, you know, in your bushel for keeping up with it. Jason Garrett for the Cowboys. And you say why, and it's because they were 13-3, and people have outrageous expectations for the Cowboys as the quote-unquote America's team, which is ridiculous as the America's team. But that's where we are right now and have been for a while. And he's got to do better. I know Jerry Jones likes him, but it's only going to be so long before Jerry Jones can keep the hounds at bay. If the Cowboys don't do better this year, I don't think they will. I think Jason would be gone, but you know, Jerry Jones is his own man, as we know by now. So we'll see. Vince Joseph in Denver. I mean, you look at that roster, 5-11. You know, and Case Keenum has not looked at all to be the free agent signer that they thought he should be. I just don't know how long, especially with that fan base and John Elway is your GM owner, whatever he is for them, the GM, I believe. That fan base is going to be with Vance Joseph going 5-11, 6-10 again. He keeps his job. I just don't think that's going to happen. And my last one, which is a little bit of a shocker, but Harbaugh in Baltimore, they haven't made the playoffs in 4 or 5 years. I mean, and you're talking about a team that's won 2 Super Bowls and a fan base that has seen Ray Lewis and Terrell Suggs and those guys. And, you know, they get knocked out by a bad Cincinnati team to send Buffalo to the playoffs last year. I know has got to be sticking in the craw. That organization, the fans. So I think really quite like under the radar, I don't think he'll be a guy that will be out of a job long. I think somebody will look at him and say, yeah, I'll hire Harbaugh if he's dumb enough to fire him. But I can see it getting stagnant in Baltimore where they both agree that, hey, we might need a break from each other, especially if he don't make the playoffs.
Good call. All right. Like I said, I agree with you on Jason Garrett 100%. I mean, both of those coaches, like you said, I think Rob hit on the head with obviously Dirk Cutter, if you will. Hugh Jackson, that was classic, Rob. I mean, you know, I mean, 100% about Hugh. And you do kind of think that if you're the Browns that they may not fire him as quickly because they may let the process play, because they realize that you keep firing coaches, again, you're going to have this whole system turnover. So that may let them stay a little while longer. But, again, you got to see some progress, 100%, man. So, but
the process is ongoing.
Yes, it is. All right. We already talked about Aaron Donald's deal, so we won't talk about
that. That was your favorite line, Andre. You remember that?
Oh, my gosh. Billy Knight, that was a pain in my – you know what? Hey, let's talk about – trying to take me down that path, Rob. Let's talk about Dak Prescott. Is he overrated or underrated, I guess, is the question. And, dang, we're already at this for Dak. He's only been in the league for a little while. We're already talking about this. This is tough. I like Dak. I mean, I want to do well, sort of. But I do feel now I'm starting to realize he's starting to get overrated because, again, I don't know. I mean, you had a success the first couple of years, and, you know, you don't have Dez, you don't have Jason, and now it's you, bro. So maybe too fast. What say you about that, JQ?
I feel like it's really early to call him over or underrated. I think he's just Dak Prescott, if I'm being honest. But the problem that he has is that he's, especially with the anthem issue, he's taken the step forward as the leader of this team now, where he wasn't targeting Dez, so you get rid of Dez. Jason retires. The offensive line takes a hit with Frederick having the illness. Now it's you and Ezekiel. And if you remember about a year ago, he kind of put Ezekiel on blast for not being there for some function. So he's put himself out there as the face of the Dallas Cowboys, what we just talked about before with Jason Garrett and the whole America's team, that this is the year where if they don't do what they're supposed to do, so I won't cuss anymore. If they bleep, you know, the bed, then he's going to be overrated in the view of a lot of people, because they're going to say, okay, you took this team over. You're the leader. You're the one speaking out for them and being in lockstep with Jerry Jones. Okay, now this is your team. If they don't come out there and do anything, that he's going to be overrated. I don't think – so I take that back. I think he's in the overrated club because of that. I don't think there's a whole lot he can do that's going to put him in the underrated club. I just don't think that's going to happen. If he does anything from there, they're going to say, okay, he stepped out, he was the leader, he did what he was supposed to do as the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys. I don't think anybody's going to say, oh, well, you know, that Dak Prescott's underrated. I just don't think that's going to happen. So he's put himself out there in the line of fire, so he doesn't have that ability, I think, to fly under the radar and be underrated. He's either going to be properly rated or overrated.
Yeah, I think this is a tough one for me because he still hasn't proven it. He still hasn't proven himself as a legit NFL throw passer yet. But I don't think Dallas are really asking him to do that either. I think they're really just asking him to manage the game and be a run-first offense. I'm going to say he's somewhat in the middle. I don't think he's neither. I don't think he's underrated. I don't think he's overrated. You know, I think he's somewhere in the middle because I don't think anybody – out there, you know, puts him in a high regard just yet, you know, as an NFL quarterback. So I can't say he's overrated, but I can't say he's underrated either because, you know, I don't think he's really putting up big numbers to where nobody's recognizing him either. So I think he's somewhere in that middle ground where he's neither, in my opinion, because, like I said, he hasn't shown that he can put up big numbers as a passer just yet. And nor has Dallas asked him to do that with that offense. And this year, I just can't see where the passing numbers are going to come from. So they need to try to, mask some of his skills a little bit more this year too. So I think they're gonna have to be a ball control offense again, and try to hope that they can play great defense to keep him in a lot of games this year.
Not a good call.
Yep.
Not a good call for the Cowboys. It's tough, man, because you're the quarterback of the. Well, the Cowboys, man, I mean, I don't think there's enough veterans on that team to kind of help them, man, to kind of get that transition, man. It's just not a good situation, man. So, it's kind of early. That's why I was asking. We're definitely early for this question. Let's keep this moving here, guys. I know we're going to wrap this up here. I'm going to tie these two topics together. Will Eli Manning bounce back this season? And will the Giants, should they regret on passing Sam Darnold? Go ahead, JQ. I was going to say Rob, but Jake, take this, JQ.
A bounce back is a relative term. I don't think he's going to bounce back to Pro Bowl level, but he was so bad last year that he can bounce back to a level in between. But he's got so many weapons You talk about OBJ. You talk about Shepard. You talk about Evan Ingram. You talk about Saquon Barkley. And that defense wasn't bad. It's just that he was so bad last year that he put that defense in a lot of bad spots. So I feel like with all the weapons he has, if they stay healthy, that he can get back to a middle-tier quarterback. But it could be if he allows that defense to stay fresh and not mess up games with turnovers, that they can increase their win total, and he may get more praise than he should deserve for it. But that's the nature of the beast of quarterback in the NFL. So I think he bounces back, but again, it's a relative bounce back. It's not an all-star, you know, Pro Bowl bounce back, but it's an Andy Dalton bounce back. Like, he can be the 16th, 15th, 14th ranked passer in the league. But if he's got a good running game and a good defense, then, you know, that might be enough, you know, to get them more than three wins they had last year or something like that. So I think he can do that. For me, the Sam Darnold one is, the jury's still out. We don't know. Yeah, I mean, preseason is preseason. So I see Darnold with the bullets flying over the course of this year and some years. I can't say they're going to regret passing on him, because I'm looking here, depending on what they do, and if they try to move up to get a Drew Lock from Missouri, and Dwayne Haskins can come out after this year from Ohio State if he has a good year. You talk about a Jake Brown, and you got quarterbacks that you can probably target, you know, in this first round for the Giants if you end up somewhere in the middle of the road and you have the capital, you know, to try to move up. So I can't really say that right now, as I think I'm pretty high on Saquon Barkley, like we all are, that they're going to say they're going to be upset that they passed on Darnold, because you don't know who Darnold is yet.
All right, Rob.
Yeah, I think Eli Manning will be much better than he was last year because of the people he has around him this year. If you recall, he lost probably his top 2 to 3 wide receivers last year. So he had no weapons on the perimeter last year, and they had absolutely no running game last year either. I think having Saquon Barkley, you hope that the offensive line will be slightly improved, and then having Odell Beckham Jr. back as well. So I think he'll be better because of who he has around him. I think they will make him better. And will it be a Pro Bowl level? I don't think so. But I think overall as a team, having all of these weapons back, I think, like I just mentioned a little while ago, I think the Giants will be in contention in the NFC East. I think they will be better than the Redskins. They will be better than the Cowboys. It's just a matter of, you know, can they catch the Eagles in that division. So I think all around, everything that's around Eli Manning this year is going to help him to be better from a defensive standpoint, Saquon Barkley standpoint, and the weapons on the perimeter is going to have him to be a better. He will be a better quarterback because of it this year. So I do think he'll bounce back this year.
Look at Robin.
In regards to the Sam Darnold question, I think I don't think they're going to regret passing on Sam Darnold right now, because I think Barkley is going to have such a big year for him that it won't hurt him. I think, you know, when it will hurt him is when, you know, running back's lifespan doesn't last as long as a quarterback lifespan. So maybe 5-6 years down the road, they may feel it, but maybe by then at that time they'll be in a position to get another quarterback. And so that's what you got to bank on if you're the Giants, that by that time, hopefully you can find another way to get another quarterback, because right now the quarterback to replace Eli Manning is not on that roster. I mean, he cut Davis Webb, and whoever else is there is awful. So they're going to have to bank on Eli staying healthy, and they're going to have to find another way to get a quarterback here in the next few years. But at the moment, if we think the improvement that we're going to see out of Eli this year, they shouldn't be feeling it this year, because I think Saquon Barkley will have that big of an impact on the team. So I don't think they'll feel it this year.
I agree.
All right. Let's see here. Let's talk about some week one predictions. Right off the gate, we got to talk about my Atlanta Falcons taking on the Super Bowl champs, the Philadelphia Eagles. And I will weigh in. You know where I'm going to go, but I would be a little scared if it was later on the season, because you mentioned it earlier, Rob, and maybe a little too, JQ, that the Eagles are still dealing with a lot of injuries. I mean, so again, that's not a reason to take them lightly by any means. Just I just think that, you know, we definitely want to take advantage because it's early in the season. So I'm glad we're playing them now versus later on. So with that, it's going to be a tight game. I do probably see us by winning by 3, but only because – just in that environment, first game, they're going to be excited. We're going to have to probably deal with like a lot of juggernaut or a lot of haymakers here, so we're going to have to kind of hold on. And I do think the defense has improved. Not too impressed with the offense, but I know it's preseason, so I'm hoping that they held back. But this is a prove-it game. I think we're going to try to step up. And Nick Foles, as great as he did in the Super Bowl, I just think they're kind of they're definitely a little bit more injured, but that defense is still great. And I know they're missing Nelson Aguilar and a couple players, or Austin Jeffrey, excuse me, is going to play. So yeah, that's my call for that. Go ahead, Rob, your thoughts.
I actually agree. I think this is going to be a tough game for the Eagles. I really do. And I know traditionally on these Thursday night season openers, the home team historically wins these games. When you look at the records, I know at one point the home team was undefeated since the NFL started this. But I'm not sure what the accurate record is. I want to say a road team finally won in the last year or two, but I'm not sure about that. But whatever it is, it's either 8-0 or 8-1 or something like that, the home team's record since the NFL is going to these Thursday night season openers. But I like Atlanta on the road in this game because of the situation that Philadelphia is in. They're not 100%. As you mentioned, Alshon Jeffrey is not going to play. They have some other injuries too in the offensive line. The left tackle, Jason Peters, is like 58 years old. And
still talented, yeah.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I think there are a few concerns with this Eagles team. I really do. And even from the defensive side of the ball as well. So I know Atlanta was unimpressive in the preseason, but, you know, I don't know if you should put a lot of stock in the preseason. But I like Atlanta to go on the road. I don't want Atlanta to win, but I think they're going to go on the road. And I think they're going to go on the road and win this game.
Yeah, I agree. I want to say that. I'm looking at it with the injuries. I mean, I like Zach Ertz, but Ajayi is just coming back this week off an injury. What's his time and his condition? And like, and Nick Foles, I mean, he still looks banged up to me. Nick Foles, I think, is starting by default because Carson Wentz can't go. So I totally agree with you, Dre. If this game is in week 8, I'm like, yeah, I may go with the Eagles if they're healthy. But where they are right now, I think the Falcons held a lot back. I think it's going to be an ugly football game, like a 17-15, 2017 kind of game where you're like, oh my God, y'all are killing me. It's hard to watch, but the NFL's back, baby, and we're going to watch it. But yep. I just
kind of like the playoff game they had last year.
Yeah, exactly. I think the Falcons win, but they win a really ugly game in Philadelphia on Thursday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're definitely catching them at the right time as well. Yeah.
100%. So I was trying to be objective too, but I just kind of like, yeah, now's the time. Let's talk about another interesting game, guys. We got the Patrick Mahomes-led Chiefs at the 100-year-old Philip Rivers at the L.A. Chargers here. So JQ is always for the Chargers. What do you say on this one, bro?
And I'm going with the Go Chargers. I'm going with the Chargers again. And the only reason why I'm going with the Chargers again, I like what the Chargers have on offense, but I think they took some steps back on defense. They got older as well, and then they got rid of Derek Johnson as well. I don't know if Eric Berry is going to be able to come back to be 100%. You know, they really never had anything opposite of Marcus Peters. Now you don't have Marcus Peters. I look at that, and I feel like Patrick Mahomes is going to try to do too much, and he has that Brett Favre in him where he's going to try to throw it in there with that big arm. And it can work from time to time, but can also get you in a lot of trouble trying to put a ball in somewhere where it's not supposed to go. And I think that's what happens ultimately. And I feel like the Chargers win a close game based off of a bad Patrick Mahomes mistake.
Yeah, I totally agree. Congratulations to the Seattle Storm and Sue Bird going to the WNBA Finals, just beat Phoenix. But yeah, I totally agree. I like the Chargers. This is a big divisional game to start the season, too. And I think we all agree that we think that these are the best two teams in this division. And for them to play in week one is going to really show us a lot about both of these teams. But I have to go with the 100-year-old Philip Rivers in this game. Patrick Mahomes, for the most part in preseason, quite a bit of the action that I saw, he's very erratic as far as his accuracy is concerned. He had one good game in the preseason where he was like 18 of 24. He's overthrowing a lot of his deep balls. So he's got to get his accuracy down and get the right timing down with his receivers, especially when you have a deep threat like Tariq Hill. So that's one aspect of his game he's going to have to continue to prove on. And so I don't think that's going to be ready to go by week one. So I got to go with the Chargers and their pass rushing. I think they could, you know, even though the Chiefs got a pretty good offensive line, I think they're going to, in order for the Chiefs to have a chance of winning this game, they're going to have to really stick to the short passing game, the screens, to keep that pass rush off balance with the Chargers and run the football effectively. But I think overall the Chargers win this game by at least 7 points.
Mm-hmm. No charges. I like it, man. And I think that Mahomes, like you said, he's young. He's got to try to throw some in there. That's where they're going to – he's going to make a mistake, man. And that's kind of – just trying to do too much. 100% agree with that. Hey, let's talk about Dallas at Carolina. And I'll start off with this one too. And we talked about Dak and just kind of overrated, underrated, and whatnot too. And they're going against a really good defense with the Carolina Panthers. Playing at Carolina, I think it's going to be tough for the Cowboys to overcome this. I'm going to pick Carolina on the road in this game. I think they're going to win by 10 just because of the fact, too, that the offensive line is beat up and just a lot of questions, too. And Cam's going to try to prove something, too, guys. I think this is going to – he's going to try to prove something that he's got a good offense. So that's my call on that. So what say you, Rob, on this game?
I don't like neither one of these teams, but let's just put that out there. But I'm going to pick Carolina at home in this game. I mean, I think Dallas – I think both of these teams have a lot of question marks, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Carolina being at home have a few less question marks than Dallas. And, you know, obviously Carolina has some issues on the offensive line. Can Christian McCaffrey be that every down running back? But I do think Carolina has improved a little bit on the perimeter as far from a weapon standpoint. I do think Carolina's defense is starting to get a little old as well, and they don't really have a lot in the secondary. So I think both of these teams have a lot of question marks, but I think overall Carolina have a few less question marks, and I expect them to win this game. I'm going to say 20-14 Carolina.
Yeah, I agree with that assessment wholeheartedly. It's going to be another – that same way I feel about Philadelphia and Atlanta, I feel about Dallas and Carolina. It's going to be an ugly game to watch. I love the football is back. We got some matchups by teams you would expect, you know, based off of name, what they've done here in the recent past, to have some good games. But I don't think this is going to be one of them. I think it's going to be a bum fight. Like I like to say, just two bums in the street fighting over a space in the alley. That's what it's going to come down to in this Carolina-Dallas game. And I feel like Carolina at home just does a little bit more to win the game. But I'm not excited to watch it.
All right, good call. Let's wrap this up, gentlemen, here, and let's do our last Major League Baseball comment here. Let's talk about the Angels at the Rangers recap. I'll let you take that, JQ, and then we'll let Rob wrap up and wrap up the show.
Man, I don't know what Rob is doing. We got two teams that ain't nowhere near the hunt. I guess the Angels and Mike Trout. But, I mean, I know you'll love it. Mike Minor, former Brave, getting the win against the Angels. They went 4-2. But, you know, I, outside of that, a little piece of it, I don't have a whole lot. I mean, the Rangers win. But, again, it's another one of them bum fights.
Well, I'm in Austin right now, so I had to throw these Rangers fans a little bit of love.
Okay.
Fair enough.
You know, we got to get some listeners right here in the Texas backyard. But even though they're off to both teams in last place in the AL Western division, the Rangers got a 4-2 win tonight. Beltre and Andrews each hit a solo home in the fourth inning, helped the Rangers get a 4-2 victory over the Angels. So there's your shout out to, you know, I dog y'all Cowboys out. I talked about y'all Longhorns, can't get it together, but y'all Rangers got a win tonight here.
We knew something was happening, JQ. He had to, like, throw a bone or something like that, too. Go ahead, wrap it up, Rob.
I had to throw a bone. But, you know, Texas A&M, they look good for y'all this past week. But we'll see what they can do against Clemson on Saturday night.
You know what they're going to do.
Yeah. Even though Texas A&M is at home, I definitely like Clemson on it. One game we forgot to predict is Georgia at South Carolina. I actually think that's going to be a pretty intriguing football game. I think South Carolina is
100%.
A lot better than people think, but I still think Georgia's going to be just enough to beat them. I'm thinking it's going to be a lot closer than people think, though. I'm thinking 23-17 Georgia on the road against South Carolina. I think Will Muschamp has quietly got a competitive team there in South Carolina. So I think the game is going to be close. But I think Georgia and South Carolina plays Georgia tough all the time, even when they don't have a good team. So they seem to always play them tough and stay in those games. I don't think it's going to be any different this year. But I think in the end, Georgia finds a way to win. Swift at the running back position, Jake Fromm at the quarterback position. And I think they'll be just enough to beat South Carolina on the road 23-17.
I go with that.
Yeah. All right.
That's what I do.
Well, That concludes our show for the evening. Ladies and gentlemen, we appreciate you all for tuning in. Next week, we have another power-packed football show. Obviously, we'll get a chance to recap week two of college football, week one of the NFL season. So we'll have a lot to talk about on next week and get you set up for the following weekend's games as well. So stay tuned. We'll be keeping you posted with a lot of updates during the week. And definitely join us on next Tuesday night, 11 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Pacific. You don't want to miss it. We'll have a lot to talk about for sure. Good night, people.
Yes, sir. We appreciate y'all hanging with us and downloading it. Hey, just get ready for some NFL. I know I talked bad about a couple games, but I'm super, super pumped that it's back and ready to play some fantasy football with my fellas here and watch some good football. And hopefully my Bengals will beat the Colts. And we'll holler at y'all next Tuesday.
Oh, the Bengals got
should
that.
Should be good. Yeah, Bengals got that. Yeah, 100%. It should be a good game. And like I said, for the love of me, for the love of the Lord, I don't know why J.K. keeps getting, like, low draft picks in Yahoo. So somehow we got to fix that, man, every year. He's gotten a low pick. I don't know how he's gotten that.
Don't feel bad, J.Q. I was in six – I'm in six leagues and in six drafts. I picked last in three of them. In half of them.
Yeah, but you guys, you get the back-to-back picks there. Picking in the middle is the worst thing. That picking six, seven, and eight in the 12-man team, 12-man draft, it's like, come on, man. Y'all are killing me. You got to give me a ball.
The only thing
one of
about
them.
Picking back-to-back, when you pick back-to-back, you got to wait so long before you pick again.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we can have a strategy.
Yeah. Yeah. But I did get the first pick in the very last draft. So I guess it even I got the first pick in one draft. I picked last in three, and then I was in the middle in two other drafts. But that's the way it is.
Nah,
you got to be prepared either way.
Nah,
don't cry
for like
me, Argentina.
Right.
Don't cry for me, Argentina.
Yeah.
I just thought that I wasn't trying to like talk junk to you, bro. I was just saying this. Was like I was like, oh my god, he literally keeps getting like these little picks, man. I felt bad. I was like, man, here, take my pick, man. But you know, it's all good. we have no idea what happened. That was a crazy. I'm like, I don't know what's happening. But anyway, a lot of love. Hey, gentlemen. Again,
I don't know how Yahoo comes
weekend,
up
man.
With the orders either.
Yeah, it's a pure aggravation.
I'm totally messing with you. It's just funny. He's not stiff like the top. Did you get like a top three though last year or something, or did you get like you had a high pick?
I did.
I
did, but the other two, I was like 8th or 10th again last year. They gave me a bone with one of them. This year, they did not give me a bone. They were just like,
yeah,
it's really difficult. It turned up for you. Good luck.
I remember that. Last year, they did the same thing to you. Except, yeah, like you said,
yeah,
one draft.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy. We're not. I'm sorry.
Don't like
I'm
sorry.
It might be something. It might be
maybe
something in the team name, man. You might think you know, Ohio players.
Ohio
you might think y'all
team,
ghetto
man.
Or something.
Oh, no, he did not go. He just called the team like the ghetto squad, JQ.
Oh,
man. Oh,
yeah, because the TV's on the end of it. It was like,
you
like
your team. Remember the rap group? Y'all remember the rap group, the Ghetto Boys?
Yes,
that's
sir.
Right.
Ghetto
Boys.
They hit me with
trick or treat.
Oh, yeah.
My goodness.
My mind playing tricks
like,
on.
We ain't going to let that out. We ain't going to let that out. With Bill?
Hey, listen, it's got to be something to it. He beat me to it. I was going to say maybe because I got Ohio in the name. I'm just like, yeah, F him. But I can't call it.
You're like, you in Georgia, man. You be coming to Ohio stuff? Nah, it's all good. Anyway,
that was me
kind of adding a little extra to the show.
I look like the
other
Cleveland Browns are in Ohio.
Yeah, they give me the business end on the low.
They're punishing you, bro. Fun times, though. Hey, but gentlemen, again, have a great week. Happy birthday to baby girl on your side, JQ. Again.
Appreciate it.
And keep texting throughout the week, man. I'm sure we're going to have a good start, man. And I'm looking for that first win of the year, man. So let's keep it going, guys. Have a good one, okay?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Yep, yep.
Good night, gentlemen.
Good night. Good night, people.
Glamour.